welcome to Season 3, Episode 6 of Professors in Rooms Getting Coffee with Drs. Justin Winzenberg and Stephen Jones. In this podcast, we look to explore truth, beauty, wisdom, and goodness at the intersection of faith and scholarship. Today, we are joined by artist Megan Yoder in part 2 of 3 of a conversation about how art connects with the themes of beauty, truth, wisdom, and goodness. Today, Megan helps us think through the art of scholarship. But first, here are our highlights, lowlights, and insights for the week.
Hey, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
It's a question we've asked way too many times, probably on this podcast, but what coffee are you drinking right now?
I just finished some coffee, but I will tell you, yesterday I had a very nice flat white. And, you know, it's one of those drinks that wherever I've had it, it's been different. And of course, Starbucks does something completely different with it. The first time I had a flat white was in Fiji, and I was supposed to be, well, I had gone to Fiji to see if we could send students there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for a semester program. And then it ended
up... Were you really suffering for the gospel there?
I mean, it was very pleasant. Yeah.
But I don't mean to make fun of that as much as, you know, it's not exactly a non-exotic location. No, it's quite nice. It's
certainly. Yeah. I mean, there was definitely community development work there was a ministry we're working with.
Then, I don't want to make light of it.
Yeah. Well, and then the culture learning actually would have been fascinating because, there's a lot of English spoken in Fiji. And so the students would have had more direct access to some of the cultural things that sometimes they don't when they're in, you know, a culture where they're just trying to learn the language. But anyway, yeah. So I had this flat white and it was amazing. And then only a couple times since then have I had one, that was equally good. So yeah,
nice.
It's kind of like your search for the Papua New Guinea coffee.
Yeah, I know. It's the saddest part about my search for the Papua New Guinea coffee is I know exactly where it is. I can go on the website and I can find it. I just can't get it shipped to the US. Gotcha.
Yeah. How about you? Are you drinking anything?
Yeah, I'm double fisting here with a brewed coffee that's sitting on my coffee warmer. Uh-huh. And then I've got a cold brew, a blended cold brew from the Crown Coffee Shop.
So, all right.
Yeah.
Nice. So you didn't one of those do mornings. the pour over today?
No. See, I'm home with the kids by myself over this weekend. Jill's on a trip with a friend.
Gotcha.
And so I had to get the kids out of the house and to school. Usually Jill's the one that brings them to daycare in the morning. Mm-hmm. So that meant I needed a little extra boost this morning.
It sounds like you got it with the two cups of coffee.
Well, yeah, I haven't consumed them both yet, but
well,
yes.
That's true. It's on its way then. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's been a highlight for you this past week?
So the last couple of weeks, we've had visitors here, which has been nice.
Yeah. I didn't know.
So yeah, 2 weeks ago we had a group that came from Massachusetts and that was really great. Including a graduate of mine and that was really fun to see him again. And then last week we had, so we're Envision Berlin. There's also an Envision France team and they came up and spent a couple days with us. And that was
nice.
Yeah, really nice to see them. There's a couple on that team that has been where they are just a month less than we've been where we are. So we started at basically the same time. And so that was kind of fun to compare notes. And then they also have kind of an arts focused program there, ministry there that they're working on developing. So it was just, that was good. Nice. And then actually in a couple of weeks, we have another friend that's going to come and visit. So yeah,
that's great. That's gotta be exciting though. Having people, you know, on site, being able to interact with other folks. And so it kind of must be a little bit of a change of pace for you than just the straight language learning process, which you're also continuing, but it's gotta be nice to have the mix there.
Yeah, it is. And it's even, I mean, it's really fun to kind of be able to show off the city, you know, it's like, to show people around and say, you know, here are things that we really, enjoy and care about. And yeah.
Nice.
How about you? What's the highlight been?
I can't remember how much on the podcast I've shared about this, but you know, I took on this new role as the director of our honors program at Crown. Did I talk about that on the podcast already?
I don't think so. Or maybe only just incidentally.
Oh, well, anyhow, what we did is we, you know, the honors program has been around Crown for quite some time. I was a graduate of it a long time ago. Really? Now
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I was, I think, I don't wear this necessarily as a badge of honor, but I think I was the first male graduate from the program.
Interesting.
And that's because we had, back then we had a lot of people who kind of were in and out of the program. Mm-hmm. It was structured differently. There were no scholarships involved, things like that. So it was a different program back then, but not bad. I mean, it was actually quite good for what it accomplished. But what we did is we revamped the curriculum for that. And our administration has committed some scholarshiping monies to students. So we had students on campus who were finalists for the program. Nice. On Thursday. Yeah, we had a chance to interview them in various formats and then share a meal together with them and their families. It was fantastic. So
that's great.
I was really jazzed about it because of the fact that the students were, it was so fun to interact with the students. Nice. And to see sort of where they're at and what they're interested in chatting about. So that was fun.
Probably a lot of work too.
Yeah. So pretty much the whole organizational, at least all the initial organizational things fell on me and the committee, the honors committee. Mm-hmm. And so many people were involved in putting it together, but it was for having just formed as a committee, basically 3 months ago, it was pretty remarkable. I think we were able to pull it off in the way we did. So it was a great event. But a lot of people were helping out. Yep. I can fill you in on more about it later too.
Yeah,
off the record.
I have a bunch of questions. Yeah. So what's a low light for you this week?
Well, you know, I think a lot of folks are reflecting on the conflict in Ukraine and everything that's happening in that region and that area. Mm-hmm. Why it's a low light for me, I've been to Ukraine 3 times and have some friends over there. Unfortunately, though, friends I haven't been able to keep in strong contact with, mm-hmm. especially after I jumped off of Facebook. I lost some of their contact info. Yep. But as I'm hearing about things and really following it closely online, I'm thinking about them and thinking about, you know, they're probably a little younger than me. And so not at all outside of the range of people who might be fighting and defending their country. And so I don't know where they're at the moment, but I'm thinking of them. I'm thinking of what that might mean for their lives at the moment. Mm-hmm. So concrete individuals whose faces are coming to my mind, and not knowing really where they are or how things are going for them, hoping that they're safe. And just thinking a lot about them.
Yeah.
How about for you?
Yeah. I mean, the same, the same situation. We are, so we're recording here on Monday, the 28th, mm-hmm. and
February 28th.
Yeah. So we're what in the, into the fifth day of the war mm-hmm. there. And, it's interesting. It's not that far away from where we are. It's not close, yeah. You know, but it's a 2-hour flight from here. And I think it was so striking on Thursday when Russia really invaded, mm-hmm. how the mood here was so incredibly heavy. And then listening to podcasts and kind of, yeah, talking with folks and trying to get a sense of where people are at here. And there's, you know, I mean, I don't know how much the news is reflected back there, in the US, but here the wrestling that Germany is doing with its own identity related to armed conflict is pretty significant. Just yesterday, the parliament approved $100 billion expenditure for the armed forces for the next year, which is just unheard of. It's 2% of their GDP. It's just this huge commitment after, you know, decades of basically saying we're not going to engage the world that way. I mean, even on Thursday they were saying, you know, well, no, we can't send weapons to Ukraine because we can't have German weapons involved in conflict, and all of this is directly tied to World War II,
which is a very different sentiment than in the US. Yeah. Where it seems like right now the sentiment is let's not put boots on the ground over there, but let's send as much weapons and mm-hmm. and support that way to help the Ukrainians.
Yeah,
and in their cause.
And then Germany has now decided to also send weapons.
Yeah,
but that is a huge change here for people, And so I think, so yeah, I mean, so the low light, so a week ago, last Sunday, I had this, I did not sleep well that night because I just had this feeling that there's about to happen. And I was kind of, I don't know if it was all night, but a lot of the night just awake with just this terrible realization that these people who were relatively okay weren't going to be. Both the soldiers that were amassed on the borders, as well as then of course the people that they were attacking, that there's, you know, people whose lives were stable and who live in apartments that look a lot like the apartments that are around us and, you know, have a fair bit of shared history with, you know, we live in what was East Germany. And I haven't been to Ukraine, but looking on, you know, as I'm seeing pictures, it's like, wow, that all just looks very familiar to where we are. It's not the same, but it's, you know, again, some shared history. And just like the disruption in their lives is so complete. And we don't know how far it'll go either. So there's that side of it. And then just, I mean, the numbers of people that have died already that, a week and a half ago, they were okay, you know? I just think that's so, but then, these bigger picture questions of what is the future of, peace and conflict in Europe and, in the world. And of course, you know, always in the background is the question of, the nuclear question. And so,
I have one of my best friends lives outside of Prague and this past week he was in Poland on vacation. So, you know, next door to Ukraine, I mean, not literally next door, but you get the gist.
It is literally next door.
Well, yeah, sorry, but he wasn't literally next door. He was on the western side, I think, of Poland. But it is interesting. I had a chance to chat with him here this weekend and to hear his perspective, being so close for proximity wise to Ukraine, and just thinking about the way that this must be a different kind of reflection for folks in Europe, even than it is for folks in the U.S. And I thought of you as well. Now, this is interesting that you're in a much different context now than you would have been a year ago. And how that probably has brought you some insight and some thoughts and reflections on the conflict in ways that maybe might not have if you'd been over here. Now, you're an interculturalist, so I have confidence that you would be thinking of all sorts of different angles of this if you were here. But the just sort of lived reality of it being on the European continent and being relatively close. Yeah, you know, I was in Kyiv every time that I went to Ukraine. We flew into the airport there and got picked up and went down to a smaller town, sort of right in the center of Ukraine. So I have these like concrete memories and thoughts of the city and thinking about what that means for what's happening in the city in particular. But then also heard about some bomb strikes that were happening in the region that I was in when I was there. So that really made me think quite a bit because I don't know for sure whether the folks that I became friends with are still in that region or not. In a lot of ways, my hopes are that maybe they're out of harm's way, but it just got me thinking a lot about that. Well, what's an insight that you have?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty muddled right now. Just there is this real strange double reality that I feel like we're in right now of Ukraine is constantly on our minds here. And what is happening there. I mean, there was a protest yesterday that they had expected 20,000 people and there were over 100,000 people. And, you know, it's interesting. You don't see a lot of German flags here, which again has to do with how Germany has dealt with questions of patriotism and nationalism. And but I've seen so many Ukraine flags over the last few days. So I've seen way more Ukraine flags than I've ever seen German flags here, which is fascinating, that sense of solidarity. So on the one hand, it's constantly on everybody's mind. And on the other hand, you know, life feels kind of normal. And that double reality feels very odd. There are already refugees here from Ukraine. There are indications, you know, that life isn't normal, but like today was a beautiful day and just walking down the street, you know, you're just doing normal things. And so, yeah, we wrote, an update to some folks this weekend and just that feeling of like, on the one hand, it feels like the only thing we should talk about is, the conflict. And then it's like, well, but actually, you know, our lives for now are continuing to move on in a kind of a normal way. So it's not really an insight. It's just kind of a weird, I should probably wrap back around and ask you what your insight is.
Well, I don't know. You've got me thinking a little bit here. This past weekend, I watched a series. I can't remember what streaming service it was on, but it was on 1968, the year 1968 in the US. Mm-hmm. I think it was a CNN special, and they have a 4-part series that cover like the seasons of that year, you know, spring, winter, fall, summer. And they talk about how incredibly impactful, to put it lightly, I guess, that year was in American history. Mm-hmm. And talked about protests of Vietnam War and the election that was happening that year. But what it got me thinking of, it related to the Ukrainian conflict, it is, and I do think that there's some healthy criticisms that have been pointed out online about how disturbing it is in some ways that this conflict gets recognized and other conflicts don't.
That's been on my mind. Yeah.
That's been a lot on my mind too. And I'm guilty of it as much as anyone else. I do think there's probably a sense of loadedness on a global scale of how this conflict, especially in light of its potential reactions coming from some of the Western powers. Yeah. And I don't want to minimize that critique, which I think is actually quite insightful and very important to consider. Yeah. But what this particular conflict, in light of me watching that series, got me thinking about is how different now these conflicts are for me as a dad, and as a college professor.
Yeah.
Because now what I think is like, if the US is pulled into another conflict, it's my students that are going to war. Or if it happens at another time, it's my own children.
Yep.
And to me, that's a man that makes the reflection very different. And I know there's someone out there probably thinking, well, geez, you know, parents have been thinking that with every conflict, you know, and it's true, but it's just not been,
it's different.
Something, yes. Not been something that I think I've realized quite as much as now. My kids are still young, but I just can't help but think, man, you wonder about how some of the conflicts in Afghanistan, you know, from the 80s, and then you think about the Operation Iraqi Freedom and everything that, you know, whatever the US called that after 9/11 and all the results there, and then how it had this constant lingering effects over the course of the next 10 to 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking about how something like this could seem like a potential isolated situation, but you just don't know, even from the US side, what this might mean for 10 years from now or 15 years from now, when my kids are of age to be sent somewhere.
Yeah.
And how different that would be as a parent. I'm thinking a lot about Russian parents and Ukrainian parents right now whose kids, you know, whose kids are in war and they're the age of my students.
Yeah.
And man, it hits me a little differently. Yeah. So I don't know, there's not an insight there as much as a realization.
Mm-hmm. We'll be back in a moment with Megan Yoder and our conversation about art and scholarship. Justin and I had a longer conversation about scholarship and the conflict in Ukraine, which you can find at patreon.com/profsinrooms. This episode was a little bit hard to put together for the reason that I had mentioned to Justin in my insight of this feeling of two different realities happening at the same time. On the one hand, this hard conversation that Justin and I just had, and then what is probably one of my favorite conversations that we've had in a while on the podcast coming up here with Megan. It feels very light and fun and encouraging. And yeah, the difference between the two halves of this episode feels hard to me. So yeah, I mean, when we recorded with Megan, it was before this recent invasion by Russia. Even when Justin and I recorded, you know, I mean, we've had a whole additional week of shelling and just absolute destruction happening in Ukraine. So yeah, just wanted to mention kind of the awkwardness of this episode. But I hope you enjoy the second half here. As we jump back in to this conversation with Megan, Justin is asking her about teaching art. So here we go.
But I was interested in thinking too, have you ever had a particular piece of work that a student has submitted to you that really just stood out to you, or that really that you found to be particularly interesting or something that affected you?
I would say I had a number of very talented students at the high school level who it was difficult to see because one had more talent, natural talent in his pinky than I'd seen in so many of my other students before. And yet he was going through so much. He couldn't actually release it into his artwork. There was always a wall in the way. And so it was painful to be able to see that and try to continually encourage it and try to continue to pull that out and to see the work potential there, to see it almost, but never quite all the way there. And knowing what could be, maybe not knowing what could be, wondering what could be, was really hard. I had other students who love to test every boundary possible just for the sake of testing it, because they were incredibly intelligent kids and they enjoyed using their intelligence to just poke and prod. And so it was fun to poke and prod back and see them be productive with that. And then I had still other students who worked their tails off and maybe weren't the best artists in the world, but they worked so hard, and to see them go, wow, this isn't a Renoir, this isn't a Matisse, but you still like appreciate it. And you could, because you could see their growth, that was so amazing to be able to show them that growth and help them to see that growth that they made was amazing and was worth all the teaching in the world. Yeah.
That actually reminds me a lot of teaching, you know, the kinds of stuff that we've taught Justin, like students that we've had who sometimes are incredibly bright and yet, sometimes being able to get that expressed on paper doesn't always come out. And then others who, I don't know, occasionally I've had students write a paper or give a presentation where they come at something from an angle I've never thought of. And it's just so exciting. It's like, oh, that's super interesting. But always this feeling of, okay, but there's, you know, almost like, okay, now go do it again, right? Do it more, go further. And yeah, it makes me think we're using the word art as though we all know what it means. I'm not sure I do. What does it mean to you?
I would say art is a form of communication, whether it's through music, whether it's through visual, whether it's through performing. I think art is simply a form of communication. It's putting things together. Like it's like saying I create things. I don't create anything. Mm-hmm. God's the only one who's ever created. He made something out of nothing. And so I struggle with that word create as much as I struggle with the word art as well, defining that. But I think art is just simply another word for communicating.
Seems that maybe there's more vulnerability in creating this kind of communication. Because I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, when we as like scholars put our words on the page, that there's a sense of vulnerability and some fear of like, what if people don't like what I say or how I said it, or what if I didn't communicate well? But there seems to be just a different level of it maybe going on with things that we deem as art. Do you agree with that in terms of it? Just there's some way you kind of bury yourself and your soul in who you are in artistic expression in ways that seem to differ than like just say writing a paper or something like that, or even verbal communication.
Yeah. I think there is a level that an artist will completely put themselves out there and not know what's going to happen. And it's scary, so scary. But I this coming from somebody who is an artist, and that's how my brain maybe thinks. But I wonder if there's that same fear from perhaps a scientist who writes a research paper that they have researched for years and poured their heart and soul into facts and figures and proving, and they're laying that out as well for somebody to read and not know what's going to happen then. Maybe art is more about letting go of something precious, or art is more related to, as you said, vulnerability versus making a picture or making a song. In Germany, is there in the Deutsch language, there's a lot of times you hear like the art of something, the art of being a doctor, the art of something. Oh, I'm trying to think. My language is not working right now. But I think it's used, the word art is used more as not always.
Like almost like a skill.
Yeah. Yeah. More like that. And so that gives it a whole nother twist to, the genre of entertainment or the genre of emotion. It's broad.
Yeah.
Deep.
And expression, because it feels like it feels like maybe some of the problem is that some of us in fields that aren't traditionally considered art don't conceptualize what we're doing enough as art. And so we kind of get lost in this idea that it's maybe just more that the form of communication within which we're dabbling with is somehow a little bit more, I don't know, it's the word I'm looking for.
I don't know what the word you're looking for is, but I think the idea that I'm getting from you connects a lot to the set of episodes that we have coming out after this one, where we talk about, after this series, where we're talking about speech act theory and some of that, like how a lot of what you're doing in your dissertation is trying to figure out what skills do I need to build? How do I apply a way of looking at the world in order to actually understand and then communicate something that is just out of grasp? And in some ways, I think that is maybe more honest and understanding what we're doing as researchers or as scholars as art is maybe more honest than saying this is, I don't know. I feel like science is too, I don't want to throw science under the bus, but like to act like, I mean, it's kind of the positivist problem, right? Of like saying I have the right tool and I have come up with the answer, right? And I think maybe a lot of what we end up doing is much more like what you do in your dissertation of saying, there is a question here that's important enough that I need to apply myself to figuring out an answer. And at the end of the day, you may not agree with the way that I've interpreted reality, but that's what I've intended to do here is to interpret and to communicate the interpretation of it. It's fascinating to think of scholarship as art.
I like that explanation.
It is, but that's also...
I like that explanation.
I love the idea of it, but I still feel like we in academia or in just traditional verbal communication, whether it be on the page or you know, in a presentation, we still just follow this certain way of stylistically of writing and stuff that is just boring. I don't know. I'm guilty of it too. I can't say that if someone's going to pick up my book's going to be a dissertation. It's not, right. But so it's sad though, because when you see a piece of art, that's not that kind of art, it elicits some response, even if it's kind of like, I'm not sure if I like that.
I think the main response that my dissertation has elicited is, oh, that's thick.
But you know what? There's boring art.
I suppose.
There's boring art hanging in museums. There's so much boring art hanging in museums that people would consider. That's good to
know. It makes me feel better. I'm just thinking, it kind of makes me think of if we're conceptualizing all these different forms of communication as art, including the kinds of things that we do sometimes in the classroom and in paper writing and all that, then the question isn't whether we're doing art or not. The question is how can it be good? Mm-hmm. Right. And good. And that's what I think is interesting. I said that there's bad art hanging in art museums, just like there are plenty of bad papers and bad books that just aren't all that interesting. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, I think you're inspiring me as a professor, because I'm thinking, I mean, how can I encourage my students not just to write what's true, but also to write something that's good, mm-hmm. good and actually pleasant and artistic and taps into who they are as people, other than just saying, here's a formula on how to write a paper and come out with the right answer. it makes me just feel like sometimes the ways that I'm teaching people to write is just not enough. It's lame. I'm critiquing myself here on the fly. I'm sorry. Maybe this is a confession more than it is a comment, but
when you let me ask a question about with your artwork. Here, I'm gonna put my teacher hat on. Okay. Mm. When you are writing and you are getting really excited about the research you're doing and you're at your computer and you're typing away and the time just flies by and it's this moment where you're just pure joy, whether what you're writing is good or not so good, or whether what you're writing is happy or challenging. Like that's that same emotion that comes from what a painting can do. Mm. That's the same emotion that comes from a sculpture, a memorial, a beautiful building. It's that same thing. And so that's why I can't separate that from the idea of creating something, maybe a visual art. It's that thinking out loud, that creative process, that joy of, wow, let's put these things together and express something, communicate something. Oh, I thought of this. Mm. How do I get it out? For you, it's possibly writing. Mm. Yes, no?
Yeah, no, I love that idea. But I feel like, you know, if you had someone who's painting a person, and then at some point you were to walk up to them and say, no, I'm sorry, that's not how we paint people. The circle has to look this way and the square has to look this way. I feel that's what we're doing sometimes in academia with like paper writing. We're kind of saying, no, this is how you have to do it. And sometimes, you know, if it comes to expressing grammatical things correctly, that's one thing. But there's also just this sense stagnancy in paper writing and in the way that expression is taught sometimes in academia that I can't imagine an art teacher doing to their students.
It isn't there. I think there's two sides of that. On the one hand, there are skills to develop in art, right? And knowing which tools will accomplish which effects or, you know.
Mm. Knowing the rules so you know how to break them.
Yeah, like, and there are rules, right? There's a discipline to it. And then at the same time, you can get really good. So I'm doing air quotes here. you can get really good at doing art and it can be meaningless in the same way that you can get really good at writing papers and it can be meaningless. Like there's something else, some substance beyond that, maybe that makes both art and paper writing true and the discipline of how you write it. I mean, I think both your dissertation and my dissertation, we were both taking the rules that other people had come up with and we said, okay, but like, let's apply it differently than it's been applied before. You know, like, I think that's part of that. That's maybe this feels like an overstatement, but maybe that's the creative genius of it, right? Of like saying like, okay, I know enough to know that it's not communicating the thing that I think is true.
Hmm. How would somebody write a paper differently? How would somebody break the rules in the same way?
I've seen papers written differently a lot, but not all of them communicated something true.
So I think it like Picasso, right? As a child, Picasso was an unbelievably realistic drawer and painter. He could do it very realistic. Now we look at his work later on and we go, oh no, what happened? You know, some of us, and then there's others of us who are like, oh yeah, that was some good stuff. Right.
Yeah. So
how do you see your students maybe being able to break out of the rules just a little bit? Because you need a little bit of structure in order to communicate. You can't just be random in order to explain clearly.
I mean, you see all these books on the behind me. I mean, the listeners can't see this, but I'm in my office and there's these bookshelves behind me and these are all academic books. And how many of them inspire me when I read them are probably limited. And I think that's maybe what I feel internally is missing, and something that I'm feeling is just a little bit more prevalent in paintings and in those kinds of forms of art is that when you see something, it can kind of give you a sense of awe and like inspiration, where there's just so many books I myself have been reading lately that I read and I'm like, yeah, it's good information. It doesn't necessarily inspire me. And I think that's just a weakness in academic writing, but it's not maybe intended to always do that either. So I guess I'm maybe just spewing my frustration here out of nowhere, because I feel like there's more capacity for that. And I'm frustrated with myself as a professor and with my own writing at times, thinking, why couldn't I be a little more inspiring? So maybe that's what's missing. I don't know. Is some inspiring, and not just couching the words in such a way that's stacking, you know, your claims, as much as it is just writing in a way that's a little more beautiful.
I think you're off to a good start.
Well, thanks for hearing my confessional here. This is definitely not where we intended to take the episode, but I appreciate the reflection. I mean, especially because of we're coming at a different vantage point. And I think it is important to think of what we're doing, Stephen and I, and what we've done as art as well. But so this kind of conversation, I think, is very helpful to think through, and how we define what art is and how we conceptualize things that are traditionally not considered artistic that could be doing that, but without knowing it. I don't know.
Yeah. I wonder, I mean, I think one of the things that's easy to lose sight in any line of work, something that's easy to lose sight of, is why we're doing what we're doing. And if the point of art, or if what art does, is that it communicates something, and if what teaching does, or if what scholarship does, is that it, you know, I mean, fundamentally, you know, knowing something and communicating something is really core. But if you don't know why, I think it's easy to get caught up on the form in both of those expressions, and to kind of lose sight of the whole purpose of it. Is that a function of wisdom, maybe?
Of knowing why, is that what you're saying? Or
yeah,
maybe knowing the time and place to push against barriers, and a time and a place to simply state an answer might be where that wisdom lies. Because I do think that not every research paper needs to be a novel of, you know, this high quality, interesting, wonderful. There's time and place where you just need to find some facts and find some explanation, so that maybe you can take that information and use it. Mm-hmm.
Well, kind of like doing a study of eyes, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, a study of form of some kind, so that when it comes time to draw or paint or whatever it is to produce the thing that really is infused with meaning, you have that skill set developed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it takes wisdom to understand timing in that.
If we're communicating, no matter what form of art we're using, and especially if we're trying, and we don't always have to, but if we're trying to communicate truth, I mean, sometimes truth isn't inspiring. And that's just true. I mean, sometimes, you know what I mean? Like, it's not inspiring in the sense like of seeing that incredible piece of artwork or of reading something. I understand that too, but they're also, I think what I feel like is missing sometimes is just this affective sense of like, yeah, you know, I get this data off the page of these books I'm reading, but at the end of the day, what I'm taking away from it is some good ideas, and I'm not really feeling impacted by it in a way that I sometimes do when I'm standing in front of a statue or something that you just think is magnificent. You're like, wow, it's doing something different to us, maybe. And again, maybe it's just like you said, the time and the purpose for which the thing is being created. But I just feel like maybe in academia, we could use a little more of that effective stuff. Even if we are verbally proclaiming the truth and we're doing it well, and it doesn't have to inspire, I still feel like we could use a little more of that.
Well, I have a follow-up question that might be an interesting way to talk about that differently. Connects to, so you recently, Megan, you recently completed the LEED ministry training program.
Specifically at 2 a.m. last night. Yes. Oh,
like whoa, that recently. Like,
that's why you're up.
That's why I was up. We had graduation last night.
Congratulations.
Wow. Yeah.
And in that, you were dealing with both theological ideas and practical ministry. And so I'm curious, as you think about, so we've been talking about this issue of ideas, right? And where truth and beauty connect. What do you find beautiful theologically or in ministry?
I think when you can tell the Holy Spirit's in the room and you want to, So there are moments that I've had here in Berlin since being here and in moments meeting with people that I've been like, I want to draw this so bad. I want to paint this. Can I just step outside and look at this? And I can't, because it's not going to be the same. It's going to be, I'm going to try, but I can't recreate the Holy Spirit in the moment. And so I think when it comes to ministry and beauty and art, the most beautiful part of ministry is something that I can't recreate, because it's something that God creates.
Yeah.
That he has taken out of nothing.
Yeah.
And been like, all right, Holy Spirit, do your work. Right. And you feel it, you see it, you know it, it's wonderful. And I can picture it in my mind, the type of artwork that I would want to create with it. But yeah, every single time that I try, it's not anything near it. And so I've learned almost just to, okay, let's just enjoy this. Let's just soak in this, and let's keep holding on to that memory instead, and praise God for that. And use that as an explanation another time for somebody else who maybe needs it, or let's just return to it maybe when I need it, as a reminder of ministry, what it looks like possibly.
I think one of the things that's so interesting is what you were just talking about, Justin, in terms of the academic pursuit, and what you just explained, like that very much intersects for me, because there are times when I was teaching that suddenly it was very obvious that the Lord was in the room doing something that I was not doing. I was just participating. And those, of course, like, were my favorite times teaching. And yeah, there is something so beautiful when it's like God is meeting with somebody in this room right now and communicating something of truth, and it is beautiful. And yeah, but I can't force it to happen.
Right. Yeah. Well, then you think how the Bible has got inspired and actually written out about all those moments, about those moments of healing, those moments of miracle, those moments of deep connection. And we're just saying that I can't recreate that. So then you think of somebody writing that out and that being the inspired word of God. It has to be God working through that particular writer, that particular artist, so that we know what happened.
Yeah.
Because to be able to recreate that, write that out, tell the story, it's never going to be as good as living in that.
I didn't quite hear what you said.
Sorry, I said I like that. But I'm reflecting on what you just said. I wonder sometimes, as you were expressing, Stephen, when you're teaching and how those moments have happened, and also Megan, as you're talking about in ministry, these unexpected moments where God is present in such a way, it's just that you can't recreate that on your own. You can't even capture that artistically in a way that's faithful to that experience. I wonder sometimes if some of the reasons why we don't always experience that is because we get so rigid with our own approaches, whether it be in ministry or in teaching, that we've got our program, we've got our content, and we've got to go at it. And it seems like maybe some of the times when we allow a space, an actual space for God to move and work apart from our program and our content, that those moments are a little bit more powerful. So it makes me think about ministry sometimes, and how we get so focused on one way of doing ministry, and that can sometimes get in the way. And I do think that is the way to put it, to get in the way of God working within those moments.
This brings the second part of our conversation with Megan to a close. We'll pick up the conversation with her next time as we think about truth and hope. Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Professors in Rooms Getting Coffee. Reed Peters is a recognized patron of the show. As always, you can join us at patreon.com/profsinrooms for more conversation and bonus content. We hope you can join us for coffee again next time.